What a tremendous decision you made today to join us in the trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics, as always emanating from our outstanding studios, because we've got the legendary Boomer Esiason joining us to discuss the draft and the draft in general, particularly at the quarterback position. His expertise has some interesting things to say about quite a few quarterbacks, including Penix. You're really going to, I think, be intrigued by what he has to say about Penix at the quarterback position. And then we get more specific with the Cincinnati Bengals, players that they may take, position groups that they may have an interest in. Boomer Esiason, every single day, he's doing radio and television, talking about the draft in the Big Apple in New York City. So he knows of what he speaks, and he's always a very interesting, entertaining guest. And this one is more of the same. You're going to like Boomer Esiason. Thanks for joining us in the trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics, as always. And as always, we are coming to you from the studios provided by First Star Logistics, which we greatly appreciate as well. And we also greatly appreciate our guest, because it's NFL draft week. And our guest is a megastar, national, international, not just local, regional, megastar, Boomer Esiason, the legendary Boomer Esiason. We appreciate you, my man.
If I was as big a star as you say I am, Dave, I wouldn't be in the trenches. That's for sure. And I love being in the trenches. I'm a regular guy, man. I fly commercial. First class, though. I will not fly it back in the back of the bus. You know what
I hear you. I hear all that. Right. That's well-earned. Well-deserved, that first class. There's no question about that. All right. So, Boomer, it is draft week. I guess, first and foremost, give us a draft story, you know, that might entertain the troops here that have joined us about your draft. What was your draft day like?
It was terrible. It was brutal. It was everything you would think it would be, especially when you have, like, you know, you think of yourself as the greatest player of all time, right? So I had a tough draft day. You know, 1984, I thought I was going to be in the top five picks.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple teams that were talking to me, and I definitely thought I was the first guy that was going to be picked, simply because Steve Young would have been picked, but he decided to go to a press conference pre-draft saying, I don't want anything to do with the USFL. I didn't grow up wanting to be in the USFL, which was in its infancy. I wanted to be an NFL player. Sure. So I wanted to make sure that all NFL teams knew that I wanted to be an NFL player. And the Bengals had the first pick in the 84 draft. They traded it. And I think they traded it when they realized that Steve Young was going to the USFL. I think they really wanted him to be their quarterback. And, of course, the Bengals ended up with three picks in the 84 draft, and there were only 28 teams. So I figure, you know, I had worked out with Sam at my high school. I had talked to Sam. I must have really impressed them, huh? So with the first three picks, they took Ricky Hundley, my teammate at the University of Maryland, Pete Koch, and then with the 28th overall pick, they took Brian Blados. And then, you know, I'm sitting in my college dorm room, and we didn't have ESPN, and I think ESPN it might have been 2 or 3 years old, and they were just covering the draft. And of course, it was all the draft coverage that we know now, but just not nearly as big as it is because of the popularity of the sport. So, you know, I'm sitting in my college dorm room, and I'm wondering, am I going to get picked now? Pete Koch got picked 16th, and I think Ron Solt, who was also a teammate of mine, an offensive lineman, who got picked by the Colts, I want to say around 14 or 12. And everybody thought I was going to be a top five pick. So I'm sitting in my dorm room, like I said, and then finally the phone rings, and it's Sam Weiss. She goes, hey, Boomer, it's Sam. You know, I think we'd love to have you as a Bengal. And I said, did you effing forget about me? So we got off to a great start, what can I tell you? And then I landed in Cincinnati, and what I remember is I was really angry because, of course, you know, I wasn't happy with where I was picked. It probably cost me a couple $1 million at the beginning of it all.
Right.
And it was Peter King who picked me and Pete Koch up at the airport. I don't know how he ended up doing it. He was writing for the Cincinnati Enquirer at the time.
Right.
And I think he had a Volkswagen Rabbit. So Pete had to take the front seat. He was 6 foot six, 290 pounds.
Right.
I had to shoehorn myself in the back seat of this thing, 6'4", 225 pounds. And Peter's going, okay, guys, we're going to Spinney Field. And I'm like, this is the effing NFL? You gotta be, you know, shitting me. So, yeah, we pulled into Spinney Field, and initially I thought that he was joking. And I thought we were at, like, the city pound. You know what I mean? I thought we were walking into, like, the pound. Because if you remember, those lockers were chain-link fencing.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's my draft day story. It's exciting. But everybody has to start somewhere, Dave, right?
No doubt. No doubt. And Boomer, with that said, that start, man, what a glorious career you had with the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, Boomer Esiason is loved, beloved in Cincinnati. There's no question about it. Oh, man. So let's fast forward to this draft. I'm sure you've been hammered about the draft. You're studying the draft. You're doing your media mogul things every single day. So what do you think about this year's draft? I mean, in my opinion, in the few drafts here before this, there weren't even 32 first-round picks in some of this. Maybe 16, 20 guys that were worthy of first-round picks. I think this is a deep draft. They can fill a first-round, and maybe some early second-round picks deserve first-round grades. It seems to be depth, and then depth at the top end as well when I look at it. What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to be quarterbacks, offensive linemen, and wide receivers are going to be the ones that are predominantly going to be picked, I think, in the first round. It really does look like we're going to get three quarterbacks right off the board. At number, you know, 1, 2, and 3, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. I don't know if it stays in that order. I don't know if J.J. McCarthy sneaks up in there. I'm not really sure. But it feels like right now that Caleb Williams, without a doubt, and I've been saying this now for 2 years, he was going to be the first overall pick in this draft no matter what. Yeah. I mean, he is that good. I mean, like, you watch him on tape and you see how he plays. He's very similar to the way that Patrick Mahomes plays. I'm not telling anybody that he's Patrick Mahomes. I'm saying, right. Like, when I met Patrick, and I haven't met Caleb, so I don't know him personally, but when I met Patrick before the draft, I shook his hand and I looked him right in the eyes, and his dad was a professional baseball player, and he was shagging fly balls in stadiums at the age of 5 and 6 years old. So you know he was not intimidated by any of this process.
Right.
And I knew that day when he left our studios some 6 years ago, I think, or 7 years ago now, that he was going to be a superstar. Now, you know, you just had that sense when you met him. I didn't meet any of these guys with the exception of Jaden Daniels, who seemed like a really nice, respectful. When you watch him on film, you know, that's not his personality. On the field, he's got a personality that's really aggressive, and he's a tremendous, tremendous athlete. And he's probably the most, after Caleb Williams, the most explosive athlete in the quarterback class in this year's draft. The one thing about him, Dave, that struck me, now he is tall and he is thin, and he reminded me of a young Randall Cunningham when Randall Cunningham was coming out of college the year after me. His shoulders and his hips are the same width.
Ah.
And that's a weird – it's like a weird body combination. It's not really the perfect body combination that you want as a quarterback, just like Bryce Young wasn't the perfect body composition that you wanted as a quarterback last year. He was too short and too thin. But this kid is tall. He's 6'5". He reminds me, of course, of Lamar when he's running with the ball. But I think he's a better passer than Lamar coming out of college. I hope wherever he goes, he gets to sit for a year and doesn't have to have the pressure of starting immediately like some of these guys have got to do now. But I hope he gets to sit for at least a half a year. And I think Washington should take him, but I don't necessarily know that he wants to go there. I don't know if there's a real sense of they want me, and if you don't feel like you're not wanted in this day and age, these players usually can, you know, force themselves out of a situation and end up somewhere else. But I would think that Washington at number two has got to take him.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I hope five quarterbacks, you know, end up going in the top 10. I hope they all, you know, because that position obviously it's the league. I mean, it's a quarterback driven league.
Plus it gives anybody picking after those guys more opportunity at some better players that they may not have thought would be there when they pick. So if the Bengals are at 18 and they got they're eyeing, I don't know, maybe the offensive tackle out of Alabama, or they're eyeing the defensive tackle from Texas. You know, maybe one of those guys will be there. But one of these unbelievable wide receivers could fall to them. And because of their wide receiver position, this would be really interesting to me. If they end up taking one of the top wide receivers, do they trade T. Higgins immediately? Mm-hmm. Because they're going to have to give money next year to Ja'Marr Chase, we all know. Yeah. And maybe does Tyler Boyd come back on a lesser contract? And then you add a rookie to the mix, and T. Higgins unfortunately ends up going somewhere else. I mean, is all of that possible? I would say that it is. But it's fascinating to me. The two teams that are, I guess the three teams that would be the most fascinating to me in this draft are the Cardinals at number four. And then, of course, I think about the Denver Broncos, who really want a quarterback. They just traded for Zach Wilson.
Right.
Doesn't really mean much. And, of course, the Minnesota Vikings, who really want a quarterback.
Yep.
And I think either Denver or Minnesota would love to get J.J. McCarthy, but they would have to trade up to number four to get him, I believe. Because if he falls past number four and the Cardinals are locked in on Marvin Harrison and the Chargers are locked in on Joe Alt, the tackle, now the Giants probably will take J.J. McCarthy. So I think you have to go up to get one of these other quarterbacks if you really, really feel in your heart that he's their guy. So to me, when we get to number four, that's the interesting thing. Three and four, Patriots and Arizona Cardinals at the top of the draft making trades.
Well, I'm with you. I think at number 18, if one of the premier offensive tackles is still there, they'll probably be a run on offensive tackle, you know, at the next level after the quarterbacks, after that all sorts out. Wide receiver and offensive tackle, it's a good draft for both of those. Which run is going to happen first, what's going to be left, and all that sort of thing. But if they can get Latham, say, at 18, or if they feel like Mims is worthy at 18, if these others have gone, or if, like, Murphy's there, the kid from Texas, like you talk about, the defensive tackle, got to put him in the consideration. I mean, I think he's, like, the guy in the interior.
Because they lost DJ Reader, and they want somebody internally. There's no question that defensive tackle has become one of the, believe it or not, even though they weigh like 350 pounds, they're not sexy, but they are effective.
No question.
They have, as other positions have kind of, you know, been lessened, like safety and running back, the defensive tackle position has really gained in popularity. And I think due in large part, you know, to the great defensive tackles that we've had, including Aaron Donald, who retired this year. So that's why Murphy would make sense for the Bengals, because they lost DJ Reader. But, you know, you're sitting there and, you know, if this one of these top wide receivers are there, which I don't think they will, but the top three are going to be gone by then.
Right.
But there are like three or four other wide receivers. This kid out of Texas like ran like a 4.25 40.
Worthy? Yeah.
Yeah. And he is another one that somebody is going to add. And what they're hoping is that player has the impact that like a Tyreek Hill has on the game. And we see what the speed does to opposing defenses and how they have to play you differently. So that kid Murphy from Texas is probably going to be gone before 20, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm seeing him in the top 10 in some, recent mocks, you know. I mean, it's crazy. He's a genetic freak. There's no question about that. You look at it though, Boomer, like you said, I mean, it's a quarterback driven league. It's a passing league. So offensive tackles are important. Wide receivers are important. Cornerbacks are important. You know, I'm kind of tabulating these mock drafts, and it's like there's 40 draftable, at least 40 draftable players at wide receiver and corner, you know, and there's depth that, you know, at four or five or six in just about every round, you know. It's crazy how many of them there are. There's a big demand for them, but there's a huge supply as well, man, because everybody's firing it, including in college. Everybody's falling back and firing the pill.
Well, when you think about the amount of draft picks the Bengals have in this draft, 10, in fact, I think they have four in the top 100. There's a lot of potential for maneuvering around the board, too, if Duke Tobin wants to do that. And I'll tell you, Duke has hit on some great players over the years. You know, nobody ever, I mean, Dave, I'm here in New York. I don't think we've ever had one phone call in the 18 years that I've been on this morning radio program, TV program, where somebody has called in and talked about Duke Tobin.
Really?
I mean, every other person, whether it be GM or coach in the league, is talked about. He never, I mean, like in here in New York, like I don't even know if people even know who he is. Now, wow. Bengal fans know who he is, of course.
Sure, sure.
But he has been about as effective, yep. but also as nondescript. And I sometimes think he's MIA. I don't even know where he is half the time. So but whatever he's doing, keep doing it, because, you know, they fell into the Joe Burrow thing, and we knew that they were going to draft Joe Burrow, and we knew he was going to be a great player. But, you know, when you start picking 18 in the 20s, you have all these other draft picks. This is where you really build your team. I mean, they did it in 84 with my draft class. We had a lot of great players that participated and hung around the team for a long time. And they have the potential to do that again here with the amount of draft picks they have.
And I'm not sure if you heard that his Duke's dad Bill passed away a couple of days ago, and that's been a rough thing. I mean, the timing of it. Bill Tobin, legendary personnel guy, and here it is close to the draft, and Bill passes. It's tough on Duke and the family, and our thoughts and prayers are with the Tobin family. But I mean, like you said, those two guys, when they were working together here in Cincinnati, it was 1+1=3. I mean, it was synergy, boy. Those two, the Tobin guys, were getting it done. And Duke's definitely learned a lot from his dad. And the apple didn't fall from the tree. I can tell you that for sure. When I look at it, Boomer, you're talking about trading. The Bengals haven't in the first round. The Bengals haven't traded up in 25 years. Now they've traded back a couple of times since 2010, but they don't necessarily trade up very often. But the other rounds, like you talk about, rounds 2, 3, 4, whatever, man, oh, yeah. they're maneuvering there. They're maneuvering big time. And like you say, with the capital they've got, you know, the 10 picks. Last year, they had 8 draft picks. All of them made the team. Yeah. All of them made a contribution, you know. So I'm thinking, if in the first 2 days, like you said, they have 4 picks in the first 97 picks. If they can get an offensive tackle, a wide receiver, a cornerback, and an interior defensive tackle to plug the run like DJ Reader, I'm good, man. The draft's good. Everything else is gravy train.
Well, you just hope they draft the right guys, right? Because you draft guys and they have their positions next to their names doesn't mean that they're going to turn out to be something special.
True.
But, you know, like when I think about this, Dave, three of my starting – six of my starting 5 offensive linemen, and I'm just like, Blades was a first round pick, but ultimately yep. Joe Walter ended up taking over for him.
Right.
You had Joe Walter, Bruce Reimers, Bruce Kazerski, and Max Montoya. They were all 6th round. I believe they were all 6th or later.
True.
In the draft.
True.
And you know, of course, we had the Hall of Famer Anthony Munoz that made us all better, but it doesn't mean that you have to grab an offensive lineman in the first round. You know, Jimmy McNally used to develop you guys like crazy. He was like a mad scientist when it came to an offensive lineman. He whiffed on a few draft picks, and you know, when I was there, but for the most part, he was able to build a solid offensive line, teaching technique and getting guys really love football and wanted to work at it. And that's exactly what all those guys were. So like these late draft picks, I mean, again, let's say they wanted to go after Brock Bowers.
Yeah.
And most likely they would have to get in front of the Jets, because most people here in New York think at number 10, the Jets are going to be a Brock Bowers looking, because they're going to want to add another weapon to Aaron Rodgers. And they spent a lot of money this offseason in free agency, albeit on guys, a lot of guys that are going to be hurt. But I think they'd like to get Aaron Rodgers another big target, which Bowers would be, and put it in that Jet offense. So if the Bengals wanted to move up, they could easily do that with the draft capital that they have right now. But, you know, time will tell whether or not that's a big issue for them, or they just sit and wait and take the best available player, which to me, you don't draft really for need unless it's a quarterback. You draft the best player available that's going to make your team a better team because he's on the field.
Don't reach. I agree with you 100,000%. Bowers, I mean, to me, he's a 2-for-1. You know, he addresses tight end and slot receiver. I mean, this dude, you know, he's going to be, and when his contract is up, his rookie contract, he's going to be categorized as a tight end. So his first big contract is going to be paid at the tight end rate, not the wide receiver rate. And that's a big difference, unless the union says, look, tight end, wide, he's a receiver. He's, you know, I mean, that one's going to be an interesting one. Final question, Boomer, and appreciate you carving all the time you carve to us, because I know you're a busy man because you're a popular man all the time, and particularly this time of the year with the draft.
Yeah.
The big defensive tackle, Sweat, out of Texas. Big run stuffer. I mean, the Bengals, there was no hope that he would be there in the second round when the Bengals pick in the second round, but he had made a knucklehead mistake at the most inopportune time in his life. And, you know, and if he slides to the Bengals pick in the second or even third round, maybe second round, still too rich. If he's sliding and he's there with one of their 2 third-round picks, do you pull the trigger? Do you say, you know what, our culture and everything is so good, we don't want to mess?
You know, the good thing is that the culture's strong and probably could handle a kid like that. And it's probably a market where if a kid went there, you know, maybe he'd fall under the radar and wouldn't be under the microscope. You know, a lot of these kids, you know, have issues in their lives. Maybe that's why I fell in my draft. I don't know. Maybe I was an idiot in college. Who knows? But there's a reason why guys fall, you know. And there was that Georgia defensive tackle, Jordan Davis, that fell to the Eagles, and they still took him at number 10 in the first round. Everybody, you know, had a big red flag against him because of his problems, and he had all sorts of issues. And next thing you know, he falls to them. I think it was Jordan Davis. They end up picking him up. So, you know, there are risks all throughout the draft. Tyreek Hill was a risk. Somebody drafted him. And then he hopefully, well, I don't know if he's turned his life around or not, but I'll tell you one thing, on the football field, he is a difference maker and he changes the game.
Right.
So as long as somebody hasn't murdered somebody or hasn't been caught, you know, dealing in drugs or fentanyl or any of this other crap, most of the stuff you can get over and will get understanding and support by the team that drafts you, because it's in their best interest to do that for you because they want to get the best out of you as a football player. So maybe he does fall. I doubt it. I mean, just because that position is so strong, Dave, and so much in need.
Yeah.
But again, to me, it's the Arizona Cardinals, the Chargers at number 5. Everybody's got Joe Alt Penn there, but what about Brock Bowers for Justin Herbert? That would be unbelievable. I mean, I've heard all sorts of stuff, and this is the week for that. So don't believe everything you read or hear. Well, everybody's playing games right now in the NFL, which makes it fun for us who cover it. And I just can't wait until Thursday night because I think there's going to be some wild stuff. I would suggest there should be some wild stuff happening around pick 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
It's going to be interesting, no question about
always.
It. Always interesting, as are you, Boomer Esiason. You're a phenomenal guest, and I know Bengal Nation loves some Boomer Esiason, man. Appreciate your time, sir.
Dave, I will tell you this one thing. There's one other player that I am really interested to see where he goes.
Who's that?
And his name is Michael Penix. He's the quarterback from Washington. Now, I love him because he's a lefty.
Yeah.
But I've watched every single one of his games. He's as accurate and has as strong an arm as anybody in this draft. He had some injury history when he was at Indiana when he first started. Got over 2 knee injuries. He loves ball. Seems like a really good kid. And I hope he gets drafted in the first round. He may be the 4th or 5th pick taken in terms of the quarterback situation. But I am a believer in that guy. I think that guy could be something special with the right coach and the right offense. So maybe Denver gets their hands on him at number 12, which would be amazing. Or maybe the Raiders end up taking a flyer on him with their pick, which I think is somewhere around 14. So I'm hoping that Michael Penix goes in the first round because the last 2 years, what I've seen from him at the University of Washington was, and I can't say it enough, spectacular. It was spectacular in college.
That's a ringing endorsement from a guy who knows what the hell he's looking at. That's for sure. I mean, Boomer Esiason. Man, we've talked about Steve Young, Boomer Esiason, now Penix. Man, we got these Southport quarterbacks going today, big boy.
Well, we can talk about Mark Brunell and Mike Vick, too, if you'd like.
There you go.
Right.
Love it. Boomer, as always, can't thank you enough, my man. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Dave, being in the trenches with you.
There you go.
Have a great day. See you.
You do the same. Thanks. Dave Lapham here, and every day I am grateful for my experience to have played professional football. As a player, I realize self-motivation, leadership, and appreciating your teammates are key. At First Star Logistics, you can use those same attributes to create the life you want for you and your family. Build your future by working hard, like I did. You'll see results both on and off the field. Call First Star Logistics today and be part of our winning team.